It is time for our weekly conversation with the Lakeville Journal, Cynthia Hauswander and Janet Manco, taking a look at the stories that they are covering, and even a look at editorial and columns as well. Good morning, you two. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good. How are you?
Good. I wanted to start off with something that's not in the paper, but I've been following it online on Facebook. A bunch of people were on Facebook saying, "We knew nothing about the Region 1 budget vote. Nothing. It just," and I couldn't take it anymore. So finally, I posted. I said, "What more do you folks want?" It is posted on the Region 1 website first of all, well in advance. It has been in the Lakeville Journal for weeks. It has been on CATV6 from the beginning of the budget hearings to now, and a PSA. We have been mentioning it on the radio every day. How much more information do you need? I said, sooner or later, you as the public have to take responsibility and find these things out, because it's out there. What do you think we do?
As Lou Timmelot of Falls Village, a former town official, always says, this is a democracy and you have to pay attention. And really, between your efforts and our efforts and the very transparent efforts of Region 1, who's been so great about sharing information, you don't even have to work that hard to pay attention, but you do have to pay attention.
Right, but it's also the people on the other, it's the public, because the information's out there. We've just become so apparently accustomed to, it's like, here, let me put this on a plate for you with a little like lamb chop frill and you'll be fine.
And this predates Facebook. We've had conversations with people from decades ago where, you know, letters were sent to them from the state government and they just tossed it aside because they were like, well, I mean, who reads that? Right. But I don't know if, Janet, you want to talk about that Facebook conversation that was going on the other day that was...
Yeah, I guess this speaks to how we spend our time, really, now. Do we spend too much time doing social media and hoping to find there what is real? Or do we try to look around and see what is actually happening around us? And so that may sound, disconnected or something, but that's how it seems to me. And I'd be curious, Marshall, if you got any responses to that comment as far as, oh, really? I didn't know that. Or
I got three or four responses from people that said, oh, I'll have to do a better job at looking at your post or listening to the radio station or picking up a paper or just very simply going to the Region 1 website.
That's right. It's so out there. And, you know, especially with Zoom meetings, everything is so accessible, and as everybody's been saying, it doesn't really take that much effort. It just takes a bit of your time, and think about how else you're spending your time and what's more important. And, you know, it was, I guess, not surprising, yet surprising, how very low the turnout was for the vote on the Region 1.
Yeah, about 350 people total. Yeah, it's crazy.
I listened when you announced that. I just said it's pathetic.
I always go back, Janet, to when I ran for the Region 1 Board of Education. In Salisbury alone, in my race, we had almost 1,000 votes. Almost 1,000 votes. And that was, it shouldn't have to be a hot topic for people to get out and vote, but anyways.
And that's the point that I think that's really, when it's contentious, well, everybody comes running out to, but the idea is for it not to have to be contentious for people to participate.
Yeah. Well, and sadly, even if it's contentious, if people aren't reading the paper and listening to you guys,
they don't know what they're voting on. They're not informed.
Yeah. And why not come out just to support those, boy, who did a great job through a tough time to pull that budget together and to keep our schools going. Yeah. But people, you're right, just don't necessarily see it that way.
All right. Well, we'll go right to the front page of the paper. And once again, you'll have the full news on your website, tricornernews.com, but also
in
next week's paper as well. Big story really on the page is by Patrick Sullivan to me, and that is the Affordable Housing Plan. A vote is coming up on May 17th.
And this is not just a big story in terms of we really need affordable housing somewhere in Salisbury. And they have to figure out how they're going to do it, where they're going to do it. But it's a big story in the sense that it's really become a very divisive issue in Salisbury, not just between, you know, you'll often have like one or two people that are opposed to a plan, and it'll sort of move its way slowly through the system anyway. But in Salisbury, you have two very distinctive groups of people who are super, super active, involved in the town, very compassionate people, and they've broken into two camps, and it's become very kind of civil war-ish in the sense that people feel badly if they're not in one of the camps or the other camp, or if their friends are in one camp and they're in another camp. It's become divisive in a way that is discouraging to see in our very compassionate small towns. And we'll be happy when this is resolved, and we hope that once it is resolved that there's not litigation following through, because all the sides are fairly lawyered up at this point. But after many, many long hearings, really ably chaired by Michael Clemens, head of the Salisbury Planning and Zoning, there will be a decision made by the commission on whether an affordable housing project, multi-unit building, can be built in what is the historic district of Lakeville, but which has always been an industrial section of the town. It's where the, I guess I'm taking a side in this, so I shouldn't, but it's a historic district. It was an area where there were blast furnaces many years ago. There are little businesses there. Many people feel very strongly that if there's a building built there, that it will create traffic dangers and that it will be inappropriate to the site that it's put on. So we'll see what the decision is on May 17th.
All right. I love the story that you've done. We just did a little bit on it. I think your story, I was talking about this before, the great thing about a local newspaper is what we touch on here on the radio station is covered in depth in the paper, and that is the ceremony which honored James Mars on Sunday. A great story by Patrick Sullivan there.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. But also nice, if you know, to have been able to hear the drumming. So there was a great ceremony held in Norfolk, the last slave who I believe was bought or sold in Norfolk. And a lot of people turned out, including our Congresswoman, Johanna Hayes, which is really a wonderful thing. Slightly chilly day, but at least it wasn't raining. And a really nice story about a tribute put together by students at the Salisbury School, which has been digging very deeply into the roots of slavery in the Northwest Corner.
All right, and the car thefts that originally basically got the publicity out of the New York side of the border are over here now also in the Connecticut side of the border and Massachusetts.
Right, quite a big deal, and a reminder to everybody that we try to put out once a year, because this happens about once a year, is don't leave your keys in your car, especially if it's out in your driveway, if you're at the gas station, especially don't leave your keys in the car and leave it running. People have lost their cars, people have lost their wallets, and really just a few minutes, but especially at home in the middle of the night. We had some break-ins last year. I think it was last year. Bob Riva caught it on his doorway camera. People just walking up and down, actually my little street in Lakeville, just walking up and down every driveway as confidently as a bear, as though they own the place, and just riffling through people's glove compartments and their cars. And a lot of cars are being stolen and used, taken to Hartford and used in crimes and then abandoned.
You know, and look at the story that came out of New York, the family that had both their cars stolen the same night. Both of them. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and then there was the big break-in at Elizabeth's where they had, you know, whole alarm system. They were able to break through the alarm system but were not able to get into the building, which is wonderful. But, you know, as a lot of little businesses are moving into Millerton, it's becoming more and more attractive. So, you know, don't leave your keys.
All right, and Sharon is now exploring, and I like the way Sharon's doing this. It's a very slow process. They're getting all their ducks in a row, and it's going to cost a little money to find out how much it's going to cost and the technology to do this. But exploring their own cable network for internet,
right? Because people don't really want to be at the mercy of the larger cable companies who come to the State Utilities Commission and beg and say, we just can't afford to wire all those homes. They're too far apart from each other, and to run all those cables up a road and have two people as customers, and maybe one of them doesn't even sign up, is we just can't do it. It's not financially feasible. So many of the towns, led actually by Norfolk, where there's a guy called Kim Maxwell, who was the inventor of something related to the Internet. I can't remember what it was. It's a little beyond my comprehension. But Kim was the first one who recommended that the town of Norfolk buy its own fiber optic cable system and mount it on the streetlights. So that's been moving forward there, but Sharon picked it up. Sharon, which has been very active all along in trying to get its own or improved Internet and phone and cable access. And put together a broadband exploration organization, and so they're looking at getting some grants to look into the feasibility. And as somebody in Sharon said, even if it turns out not to be feasible. It is kind of a warning to these cable companies that we mean business and that maybe they need to step it up a little bit here.
Well, the great thing about what they're doing in Sharon as well is they contacted me, and they are looking at they're asking me, once I get my Starlink installed, they want me to update them and how it works and how the speed works as compared to what's there now. They're open to a lot of different ideas, but the basic central idea is that this is an important topic and this is the way we're going to start off with it. I just think they're doing a great job with getting together and becoming as public as they are.
But this links up to another story we have, this which is ongoing, which is the cell tower that's being proposed for the Wake Robin Insight in Lakeville, and it's falling to that same camp as the affordable housing, where somebody had emailed me immediately when they heard about this and said, "Oh, thank goodness, we really need cell service around the lake," and then got sort of caught up in the group that's opposing it, which is more on aesthetic grounds, and sort of switched sides because, again, they felt social pressure. And people in Kent had a similar thing going where AT&T came in. There's a very dangerous stretch of Seeger Mountain Road where a lot of accidents happen. There's no coverage. So AT&T came in and said, you know, we'll put a tower up here. We'll let you choose one of these. We have two sites. You choose the site you want. We'll, you know, throw up the balloon. And a lot of people came out very, very angry, very hostile to it, and said, we don't really care if it's not safe. We don't care if those people in that area don't get cell service. I live in that area. I don't care if I get cell service, people were saying. So the Siting Council, which oversees all these decisions, is not allowed to be left up to the towns, decreed that there could be a tower built in Kent, and now that's in litigation. So we'll see if that happens with the cell tower being proposed in Salisbury, but it's a similar thing with the 5G internet, which requires, you know, lots of small repeaters, and Governor Lamont had said every town in Connecticut is getting 5G. And I remember Brett Colley, the first selectman of Sharon, saying to Lamont, a lot of people in my town really want it, but a lot of people are saying they're super concerned about, you know, radiation and the aesthetics of having all these repeaters. So it's very complex, and even if they're able to do the fiber optic, it's not a guarantee that they'll be able to get it through with the public. So, tricky.
All right, let's go on to the farm market season. Nice picture of Gordon Ridgway.
Right, the first farm market out of the box. And, of course, Cornwall famously has not only the two outdoor farm markets, but has had the local, which opened last winter, and it's beautiful, beautiful space designed by Dee Salomon. And it's got soups and breads and cakes. Susan Sicardi and Susie Sweet's famous baker from Cornwall now. Flowers and produce. And, of course, all of Sam Waterston's farm products, including beautiful woven goods and sheepskins and things. So what happens at the Cornwall Farm Market now, the co-op, is that whatever's not sold at noon goes over to the local. The local is right next door to the original Cornwall Farm Market, which is on the lawn of the Wish House.
Yeah.
And that's not opening till the end of May. They're waiting for, as I understand it, one of their prime bakers hasn't yet figured out her schedule, so they're waiting for that to happen. But very exciting farm market season.
All right, page A3 has more information about the Sharon budget vote, the Falls Village Finance Board, and an Arbor Day celebration up in North Canaan.
Right, and sort of sadly, two trees planted in honor of one of, for Katie Sherwood, young and very beloved person around here, died from cancer, and Lila Wood, whose obituary is in the paper this week, died suddenly and unexpectedly, and very important members of that community honored.
I was shocked when I saw the obituary for Lilawood. You know, it's but then again, well, I won't be around to see my own, so I won't, it's just, you know, we're all getting older one way or the other. Hey, on page A4, you've got a nice little story there about the change of names from Rick's Wine and Spirits.
Right, and it's a long, complicated drama. It's when I won't give the whole backstory on it, but Dave Wheeler, a beautiful sign-up. Dave has been a long-time waiter at the Woodland, where, of course, the late Rob Peters really knew wine and really trained the waiters, the wait staff. And Dave was famous as really being the guy who knew what everybody wanted to drink. And so he took over Rick's Wine and Spirits after Rick died and has slowly been affecting the change of the name and has his new sign-up now.
All right, you've got the Hilltop Road residents asking about speeding. Kent budget public hearing May 7th as well.
Right, and a tricky conversation on speeding on Hilltop Road, which is kind of what we would call a rural minor collector. A lot of people use it to shortcut between the two state highways, and residents of that road saying not only is it annoying for us as residents of the road, but, you know, Sharon Center School is right here, and it's dangerous. And the selectmen, you know, again, you have to weigh the two sides on this, just like with the cell towers and the internet and everything. So they're saying, well, we'd like to do it, but what happens when every single person in town asks us to put in speed bumps, et cetera? It becomes financially undoable. So a knotty problem.
All right, before we get to Compass, we will go once again to, first of all, remembering the flood of 1955. I was only 3 years old, but even where we lived on the border of West Cornwall and Sharon, we had huge flooding problems from water coming down the mountainside and down the small, what they call Karst Brook. But seeing these pictures really shows the incredible devastation that happened back then.
And in a weird way, the devastation was worst in the towns because they actually had roads that were destroyed. In our little towns here, especially back in 1955, still a lot of dirt roads, still fairly, you know, underdeveloped. So it could be repaired easily, but you can see in these photos that we had from our archive from Winsted, really unbelievably crushing. And, you know, there are people who still say that Winsted never quite recovered. So a talk coming up at the Torrington Historical Society on what happened in Torrington. These photos are from Winsted. You can see them and the stories about little towns like Sharon and Salisbury and as far as, you know, it's Washington Depot in on our archive, which we have the link to in that article.
All right. On the opinion page, something that we live and breathe here every day at Robin Hood Radio, and that is your editorial, Janet, supporting our local businesses.
Right. You know, there's not a lot we take for granted coming out of a pandemic that shut so much down and put so much at risk, including our health and well-being. And one thing we really can't take for granted is that businesses will have made it through this. But it's really starting to feel in the northwest corner as if with high vaccination rates and things starting to open up again that we've been pretty lucky around here with the places that have made it through, but take a look. Look for your favorite places and give them your support. They need it now more than ever, every kind of business.
And I have to go to turning back the pages because I was shocked to see that it was just, it was 25 years ago that the Salisbury Pharmacy went and was purchased by Elaine LaRoche.
I know, right?
At 25 years, really?
Yeah, what would you have thought? Maybe 10, I don't know. Yeah, no. But yeah, 25 years ago, and that was a big change in our downtown Salisbury feel. But, you know, Elaine kept it going. You know, the late Elaine LaRoche, who did so much in the town of Salisbury and the area, things have changed yet again, and that happens around here. But it is fun to look back, isn't it?
Yeah, well, lots of letters once again this week on lots of different topics.
That's right. We have Deborah Moore on the quandary of Sharon Hospital, following up on Dr. Kirsch's letter last week about keeping the ICU open. Deborah comes in with lots of facts she wants us to be aware of. Caroline Birchfield, a really good letter on appreciation for nurses because there was there's National Nurses Week this week. So, yeah, keep your nurses who take care of so many of us in mind and thank them for what they do. We have a couple of letters on upcoming 2022 elections and how things must change in Connecticut, and actually a letter from Molly Fitzmaurice and Sharon supporting the nonprofit direction of the Lakeville Journal, which is always nice to see, so thank you for that. And a couple of columns on Biden's first 100 days from Dick Ollis and Manhattan and how different it is and how it's reopening from Mac Gordon. And as Cynthia said, it's like a walk back in time. He's telling us what it was like when he was there as a young guy and wondering what it'll be like now.
All right. And Peter Steiner's cartoon is great about the two people walking down the street that are just full of tattoos saying, "The vaccine, no, thanks. I hate needles."
Yeah, that made me laugh for sure. Yeah,
that's a classic. All right, well, we'll move over to Compass now for a few minutes because there is another gallery that opened in Falls Village.
Falls Village in North Canaan, a lot going on all of a sudden. If you drive through North Canaan, you'll see a lot of coming soon banners and storefronts that have been pretty dormant for quite a while, and same in Falls Village. So you had the former town hall, which has sort of variously been a residence for several people, although technically not a residential property. For those of us who've been around for a while, it was the Falls Village Town Hall, a beautiful, beautiful building. It has a giant safe in the back, and so half of the building is now going to be a high-end coffee shop. The other half is this art gallery started by a young woman who's an artist, Kathleen Cooka, from New York, and is doing works on paper, and has a guy called Stephen Main, who's from Cornwall, doing very interesting work. Show just opened on May 1st, and they've got flat files of additional work on paper in the old vault. And then Patrick writing about a Salisbury farm from a couple weeks ago, the very interesting Jerry Saltz, kind of where he came from and how he ended up as an art critic for The New Yorker, and preview information on the next Salisbury farm coming up, and a talk by Amy Wynn coming up on the American Mural Project. Amy, Falls Village resident, executive director of the American Mural Project, which is run by Alan Griesdick of Sharon. That talk is on Wednesday, May 12th.
I want to talk about an incredible project. That American Mural Project she is such a strong woman, and she worked for so many years to get where she is now, right now, with that project. It really is an amazing thing. You should do a story on the complete timeline and the ups and downs. The stick-to-itiveness that she has, Ellen, in putting this together is just amazing.
She's like a train. So we do actually have coming up our June Compass tabloid issue, the little booklet that's separate from the regular paper, and that's going to be summer entertainment. And Deborah Alexinus is doing an in-depth story on AMP, which I think is finally going to open this summer. And then also coming up later this month, there's going to be open visiting days at AMP and also at Whiting Mills, which has all those interesting little artist studios. It's a really, really fun day out. And, you know, after you look at all the devastation of Winstead, it's nice to go over there and see some of these old factory buildings kind of coming back to life.
And Janet, I have to go back to the letter supporting your move to nonprofit status. I just happen to think that whether you're a nonprofit or not, I spoke about this earlier this morning. Imagine this area without the radio stations or without the local newspapers. What would people do? What would they do? And whether you're nonprofit or not, it's an important thing that people need, and they should support it either by purchasing a paper or making a donation. And when you become, it's that important. If you lose, and Don Morrison did a real great commentary on this, you just cannot lose the local media. That's probably one of the most important things that we have going in our country.
Well, it certainly is, but of course we know they can be lost, and there are plenty of news deserts across this country that are very hard to get back. It's hard to start from scratch to have local news coverage if everything does disappear. So, yeah, I hope that your listeners and our readers are now very aware of the fact that, you know, it's not a given that we will just be here. You know, it's not like it was in the 80s where there was, you know, plenty of advertising support and, you know, lots of other ways to bring in revenues for radio stations and newspapers. It's different, but just as important now, if not more so.
And just imagine, if you can't find out about the Region 1 vote now, what are you going to do if it all goes away?
I know. Yeah, Facebook isn't going to tell us about this unless there's some content they can pick up.
That's accurate. It's amazing. All right.
Who are you going to blame? Yeah. Who are you going to call?
That's right.
Well, of course, you can find the Lakeville Journal online, tricornernews.com, at your newsstands. You can get home delivery. Guys, we'll speak to you next week.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
That is This Week in the Lakeville Journal. As we said, tricornernews.com.